series that we're under, there's a lot to be read. And from the readings today that were from Genesis 12 through 17 and then Exodus 1 through 20, these two particular passages have been chosen to focus the thoughts on the sermon. The first is from Genesis 12, verses 1 through 7, which I believe, yes. Always faithful, Owen. Thank you. So if you don't have a pew Bible, but you can read it up on the screen. So the first is from Genesis 12, verses 1 through 7. The Lord had said to Abram, "Go from your country, your people, your father's household, to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all the peoples on earth will be blessed through you." So Abram went, as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he set out from Haran. He took his wife Sarai, his nephew Lot, all the possessions they had accumulated, and the people they had acquired in Haran, and they set out for the land of Canaan. And they arrived there. Abram traveled through the land as far as the site of the great tree of Morah at Shechem. At that time, the Canaanites were in the land. The Lord appeared to Abram and said, "To your offspring I will give this land." So he built an altar there to the Lord, who had appeared to him. This ends the first reading. The second reading is found Exodus 3, verses 1 through 15. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that, though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, "I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up." When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, "Moses, Moses." And Moses said, "Here I am." "Do not come any closer," God said. "Take off your sandals, for the place you are standing is holy ground." Then he said, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. The Lord said, "I have indeed seen the misery of my peoples in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the land of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now, go. I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt." But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" And God said, "I will be with you. And this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain." Moses said to God, "Suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, 'The God of your fathers has sent me to you,' and they ask me, 'What is his name?' Then what shall I tell them?" God said to Moses, "I am who I am. That is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you." God also said to Moses, "Say to the Israelites, 'The Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, has sent me to you.' This is my name forever, the name you shall call me from generation to generation. This ends the second reading.
Good morning. It's good to see some of you today. These are difficult times, but we're still God's people and we trust Him. So we've been walking through the story of the Bible, and so this is the schedule that we have. And so far we've done creation and crisis with Martin. So today we're going to focus on the word calling. Calling. In a class at Regent College, Eugene Peterson and Gordon Fee, two great biblical scholars, they were chatting to each other. And Eugene Peterson was telling Gordon Fee that they have this tradition. Every time his children bring the grandchildren, every night he tells them stories. So he sees them in his lap and he tells them story. And Peterson was telling Fee that the last time they had come, he had seen them in his lap, and he started the story, but one of the grandchild said, "Grandpa, tell me a story, but this time put me in it. This time put me in it." And Gordon Fee says that at that moment, he thought of this story, of the story of the Bible, because it's God's story. But He put you in it. So I tried that at home, and I'm telling Noelia and Felipe every night, I'm telling them stories that I make up at the moment. And every time they ask for a different story. And one night I said, "And then Noelia and Felipe appear with a lightsaber." And Noelia screamed from the top of the bunk bed, and she said, "What? Am I in the story?" She was so excited. So, yes, in this story, you are. You are part of this story. And calling is our key word today. So Martin ended up with a question last week with two things very important to remember: God's call of Abraham. We were created from within a relationship. We were created for a relationship between us and God. And he ended up with a question when he said, Genesis ends with judgment. Is it a glimmer of hope? Do we have hope? And then we have three questions. How does God deal with the problem of evil in the world? What is God going to do? Is God going to give up on humanity? I think you know the answer to that question, right? No. So our three key words that the kids place on the cross this morning, on top of these horrible things, the scenes that you could see there, three key words. How will God answer to all of these? To envy and violence and greed and anger, sloth, He will call people to trust Him. That's the way God will deal with sin in the world. So the call of Abraham is God's answer to the problem that Adam presented. It's God's answer to sin. God calls people. There is a mess. Human beings have spread violence, sin, murder. And what is God's answer? He calls people. Interesting. Even though human beings have made so many mistakes. God is still involved in his creation, and he is still investing in people. The story tells us that this is still God's world. He has not abandoned it, and he never will. And God is still loving people. Have you heard in the last few weeks, like I've seen it on social media, I'm losing my faith in humanity. You heard that expression? After people hoarding like toilet paper and buying those little hand sanitizers of $2 and selling them $40. And people say that, oh, in times of crisis, people show their true character, right? So I'm losing my faith in humanity. Well, God is not doing that. And we have messed up. We have to acknowledge that. But God is not like that. So through the story in the beginning, through this period of crisis, when after Adam and Eve sinned, we still see some tokens of grace. For instance, God provides clothing to Adam and Eve. He provides a mark to Cain, who killed his brother, so he wouldn't be killed. However, at the end of chapter 11, between chapter 1 and chapter 11, you see the beautiful creation, and then we mess up. And we ended up in chapter 11, what is going to happen? What is God going to do? And it seems that God is doing some sort of damage control, but we need some kind of comprehensive plan now. We don't damage control enough. Right, like we're doing now. Okay, we're shutting this down. No gathering. Okay, but now we need a plan. What are we going to do? So God calls Abraham. God calls Abraham into a relationship with him. Oh, I have two screens. One there, nice. And through Abraham, God will create a people to bless the world, a people to bless the world. So God seeks to reconcile humanity to himself through the person of Abraham, and through him creating a nation to be in relationship with him, to bless all the nations in the world. So God calls Israel, and from Israel, he will bless the nations. And he begins that comprehensive redemption project, the plan. How do we fix this? By calling Abraham. He will create a new people. And we had a couple of things in there in the next slide that Martin highlighted last week. Two questions. Why does God not stop humanity from sinning? Because he is in a relationship with us. He could have just forgiven and forget what we did, but no. There is in this relationship a very important thing called responsibility. Relationship requires responsibility. Very important. But a second aspect that is crucial, and this is in the next slide, is the key word, trust. Relationship with God requires trust. Trust. Trusting God. God trusting us with his plan to bless the world. He calls Abraham, I will make a nation from you, and you will be a blessing. Through all the nations, your blessing will go. And what is this blessing? Well, we can think of life in the garden. Life in the garden of Eden defines what a blessing looks like. Like a spiritual, emotional, physical, psychological, and material wholeness that comes from a relationship with God. A relationship with God. Deuteronomy describes this as a covenant relationship with God. And he calls people to have a relationship with him, which will lead to material, spiritual, and emotional wholeness. And God chooses Abraham to be the vehicle of this blessing for the whole world. A good example of that is Joseph's story. You ever heard Joseph's story? When he goes to Egypt, he's sold by his brother, and he's in so much trouble, but at the end, he gets to be the right hand of Pharaoh. And what does he do? He blesses Egypt. He's a skillful administrator. He's smart. He's good. And he blesses Egypt. What is he doing? He is doing what he's supposed to do as a true descendant of Abraham. He is blessing the nations. He is blessing the nations. But the story requires trust. And trust is not always easy. In all our stories that we have inherited from the Bible about Abraham, there is a true picture of what true faith looks like in a human life. And some people want to describe Abraham as a hero of faith, and in many ways he is a hero of faith. But he wasn't perfect. He was a human being. Actually, he was asked, imagine, leave your country, leave your people, leave your father's household to the land. What land? Oh, I'll show you. Don't worry. I'll show you. And I will make you into a great nation. Okay. It's a little problem. Abraham has been asked to leave, and he has no land. He has no descendants. He might ask, leave, go where? To the land I'll show you, says God. So he is calling to the unknown, and we have fun singing that beautiful song, Into the Unknown, right? From Frozen 2. All the children have seen that movie. So he is called to trust and not to fear. That's a good reminder for today. If you're a good reader of the Bible, you're going to see this phrase in the Old Testament over and over and over again. Do not fear. Do not fear. Do not fear. In Genesis, in Exodus, in the prophets, God tells Israel, or Abraham, Moses, do not fear. Do not fear. And the very first time that God says that is in Genesis 15. And he says this to Abraham. Hey, do not fear. I am with you. Do not fear. So he is called to take a big, big leap of faith. Of faith. But let's be honest. Let's be truthful. That is not easy. We're all human beings. We're all doubt. And you never done it? Boy, let me give you a medal. You deserve it. Abraham's story tells us that trusting is not always easy. At the beginning of Genesis 12, he looks like this amazing hero of faith. Oh, I will go. I don't know where, but I will follow you. But then you start reading into the story, and you see that Abraham started doubting. And then he's like, is God really with me? And he goes to Egypt with his beautiful wife. And they ask, oh, who is this lady? And he's like, oh, she's my sister. Because he doesn't want to be killed or be hurt. So people take his wife. And then he sees that God promised him a nation, an inheritance, and a land, and to have many children, but he doesn't have any children. So he decides to give a little bit of help to God and to have a son with a slave woman of him. So he fails. But this book is about, this story is always about second chances. So God fulfilled his promise. He will have Isaac. But there is still a question in there. Do you trust me? The question is still lingering in there, in the Abraham story. Do you really trust me? Okay, you told your wife was your sister because you were scared. Okay, I might give you that one. But then you had a son with a slave woman. I told you I was going to give you inheritance. I was going to give you children. Do you really trust me? And then we have Genesis 22. What happens in Genesis 22? God asks Abraham to sacrifice Isaac. How's that for a test, Angela? Give me your precious Isaac. Sacrifice him. So the question, there is a Hebrew scholar, an Old Testament scholar, Ellen Davis. She's unbelievably smart, and she says, if I were editing the Bible, I would have removed that chapter. This is the kind of reading that gives God a bad name. How come this God ask Abraham for his precious son Isaac? Can you imagine? Give me Felipe. Oh, no way. No way. But that is not the focus of the story. The real focus of the story is like this question. Abraham, do you trust me? Because in this story, in the story of creation, in the story of God, in which you and I are playing a role, a very important role, trust goes both ways. God is entrusting us with the gospel. He entrusted Abraham. But now he requires, hey, come on, Abraham, do you trust me? God is faithful. God is faithful. So the story is about people being called to trust God and to be in a relationship with him. That's the very heart of a relationship. Trust. You ever heard that? If you miss the trust in a relationship, that relationship is over. Yeah, that is true. That is true. Trust is very important. So the call of Abraham is not a law, it's not an unfair command, it's a call with a promise. It's a call to come, to get close to God, to be in a relationship with him. This imperative is an invitation to live a life of barrenness, a fruitless life. Abraham is called to have a new beginning. A new beginning. Many scholars that work in the Old Testament call this story, the call of Abraham, a new creation story. God created first, we messed up, and now he's creating a people to bring his plan for redemption. A new creation, or a second creation account. The first creation story focuses on the cosmos, the universe. In this new creation account, God calls a new people into being to have a new beginning, a new relationship with humanity built on what? On trust. To channel God's blessing to the world. So the life of Israel under the covenant, it's a relationship with God that will model the way of life that God wants from people. And this way of life will attract others and will bless others. So others will say, look at Israel. Wow, look at the way they live, the way they behave and bless other nations. We want that. We want to get to know the God of Israel. That's the purpose. So you know how the story goes. Abraham, we have Isaac, Isaac we have Jacob, Jacob we have many sons, and one of the sons will end up in Egypt, Joseph, who will bless Egypt, a true descendant of Abraham. He will bless Egypt. And he, during a period of famine, he will bring his people to Egypt. But 400 years pass, and a new Pharaoh who doesn't know Joseph, doesn't know Israel, he enslaves the people of Israel. And here we go again. God needs to call another person to continue his project. He calls Moses. Moses, Moses, Moses. Very important. He doesn't say, hey, dude, I said in the first service, but I second service, hey, sir. No, he calls him by his name, Moses. Moses. And then he tells him, hey, you know who I am? I am the God of Abraham, and the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And he gives him a list of names. Why? Because God is a personal God. He is in relationship with people with names, in a personal relationship. And what is all this story about? Three things: God's presence, God's name. Four, God's people. How is it possible to have a relationship? There's one thing you need, we said, trust. Another thing we need that is very important is presence. In order to be a friend, in order to be a real family, we need to be present. And that's the one thing we're losing today. Through social media, and I was teasing the teens in the earlier service, that I've seen, not here, but I've seen groups of teens sitting together in a park, and they're all in the phone, not talking to each other. Actually, we were on a date with my wife, and we are sitting in this restaurant. We're seeing another couple, young, very young, and both, the whole time they were dining, they were not present with each other. It's just awful. Awful. To have a true relationship, you need presence. And this is the Exodus story. Presence. God's presence. So you remember, right? God calls Moses, and Moses like, me? I cannot do this. And God's answer, yeah, I know. That's why I will be with you. And then Moses, I don't know, if they ask me your name, what's your name? Heye Asher Heye is the Hebrew that sometimes we translate, I am who I am, but a better translation, because we don't have present active, we don't have for the verb to be in Hebrew, that doesn't exist. So it's an imperfect. So what it says, the Hebrew says, I will be who I will be. Meaning, do you ask me what's my name? I will be with you. And I will be with you. So the name in ancient Near East, when somebody asks a god, what is your name? They're not asking for a secret code or a weird name. They're asking, Moses is asking, what kind of god are you? Because in ancient Near East, the name of a god is intended to communicate the character of that God. And what is God's character? God's character is exactly that. I will be with you. Faithfulness, loving kindness, God's presence. God's presence. John Walton says, the very purpose of the whole book of Exodus is to explain how God's presence came to dwell among his chosen people, Israel. Israel. My presence will go with you, he tells Moses. But this is a real story with real people. People make mistakes. And I think if you ever read this book, I don't want to spoil anything, but Israel made a few mistakes. I don't know if you realize that. So God is like, you know what? Okay, you're free from Egypt. I will send my angel with you. Off you go. And Moses answered. This is Moses' answer. If your presence does not go with us, do not send us up from here. Basically, he says, no deal. If you don't go with us, how will anyone know that we are your people unless you are with us? What else will distinguish me and your people from all the peoples on the face of the earth? Presence. Moses knew they got nothing. There's no relationship. There's no trust. There's no call. Nothing without God's presence. So, these three new words play a very important role in these two stories. God's called Abraham to form a people. God's calling Abraham to create people, a nation, and from there to bless the world. How are we going to deal with this mess, with all these sins, the loss of order and abundance and blessing? It's all on the ground now, like here on the cross. Well, God calls people. And even when Jesus comes, he doesn't stay around supervising us like, oh, I'm going to have to stay here forever because you need me. He trusts people. I will send my spirit. My spirit will be with you. And I will entrust you with the message of the gospel. So how will God deal with this? He calls people who are called to trust him. So God calls Abraham to create a new people, to bless the world. God comes among his people to be in relationship with them. That's Moses in Exodus. So the question is, how will God's people respond? How will you respond? Remember, trust goes both ways. We always emphasize, yeah, we need to trust God. It's true. But don't forget that we are responsible in the sense that God has entrusted us with his redemptive project. We are called to trust God. And God has entrusted his people with his message, with his story. So, trust God. Because he has trusted you. Isn't that amazing? The God of the universe has trusted you. He has trusted you with his story. And now this story, to be shared and bless the nations, is in your hands. So trust him. So learn the story. Love the story. Live the story. Share the story. Because you are God's people. Amen.